I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Elizabeth Hay joins me again. The best-selling and prize-winning author has a new book out, His Whole Life. The book opens with a family taking a road trip. Jim, a 10-year-old boy, asks his parents, "What's the worst thing you've ever done?" The book is a coming-of-age story set in the mid-1990s and soon takes the reader into various areas like the bond between mothers and sons, families coming apart, the Quebec referendum of 1995, forgiveness and regret, of course. I'll get Ms. Hay to tell us about this book and these characters. I've started it, and it's riveting stuff. Elizabeth Hay was last on when her Giller Prize-winning novel Late Nights on Air was published. Her other books include Alone in the Classroom, A Student of Winter, Garbo Laughs, and Small Change. She is a former radio broadcaster. Her website is at elizabethhay.com. The book is published by McClelland & Stewart. She will be appearing in at least three times at the Vancouver Writers' Fest this October. Visit writersfest.bc.ca for tickets and information. She lives in Ottawa. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in Vancouver today, Elizabeth Hay. Ms. Hay, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
So your own son, like Jim, asked you this question once.
It's true. He was also like Jim, 10 years old. And we were driving from Boston, where my mother-in-law lived, home to Ottawa. And he asked this question out of the blue, "What's the worst thing you've ever done?" He was sitting in the back seat, and I turned around to look at him, and I really saw him in that moment as a character in his own life, worried sick about something he'd done.
Mm-hmm.
And the question I really wasn't able to answer, couldn't imagine what my worst thing was, and he wouldn't tell me his, but the question stayed with me.
So do you then come up with a list from then on as to what could be the worst thing you've ever done, say?
Well, you know, what happened was I did. I kind of combed through my life, and things occur to you over time. You know, I had managed to forget certain things.
Yeah.
But thinking about them, thinking about the question reminded me. I never, over the next number of years, ever learned what was the worst thing my son had ever done. I decided at the time, when he was about 10, 11 years old, to write a story about him. I called it Boys and Dogs, and it was in the present tense and the first person, very much about my son, who was this tempestuous boy. And it was a few years ago that I thought I should really return to the beginning of that story, revisit the material, and go deeper with it. And that's what I did. I moved it into the third person in the past tense, and I gave these characters, the mother, father, son, I gave them fictional names and fictional backgrounds, and I set them in motion again on a car journey to Canada.
Kids do ask sometimes uncomfortable questions, but usually perceptive questions, don't they?
I think so, and especially in a car.
Yeah.
There's something about movement. You know, moving in a car, you're together for a long stretch of time, and things just kind of come to mind. And I've always found, you know, when we were traveling with our kids, my daughter too, I have a son and daughter,
mm-hmm.
that they would say the most remarkable things out of the blue. And you'd think, wow, I didn't have any clue that you were thinking that.
Yeah. So Jim is, as you said, he's a precocious, he's a intelligent young man. He's 10.
Yeah.
What are the things that he's encountering in life that he's thinking about? Say, I mean, we all have problems, I guess. But
yes.
For a 10-year-old Jim, what are his?
Well, he's an American boy, growing up in New York. He has a Canadian mother and an American father. And once a year, towards the end of August, they make this trip to a lake in eastern Ontario to join for a week the Canadian side of his family. So he has this divided identity. He's American-Canadian. He moves between New York, to which he's very attached, to this lake in eastern Ontario, to which he's very attached. So he's over the course of the book, you see him trying to deal with competing claims on his love and on his loyalty. He's has a very close bond with his mother. The father, George,
mm-hmm.
is really a disappointing father. and an irritating husband, and so a kind of a fifth wheel in this marriage. That's the dynamic that he's growing up in. And then because the certain things happen, the father becomes sick, for instance. And that changes what might have been an outcome. So Nan, the mother, who's been on the verge of leaving the marriage, stays. And that I must say, and I'll just add this right now, is reflected on a larger screen, if you like, by what's happening in Canada. Will Quebec leave or will it stay?
And that's 1995.
1995, yeah. Which was such a dramatic moment in this country's history. And I thought, you know, this is rich material that I can tap into.
And so Jim and Nan, the son and the daughter, I mean, they have views on what's happening in Quebec and what's happening with the future of this country.
They do. They have divergent views. And then there's a very close friend of Nan's who comes into the picture and complicates it even further, and her name is Lulu Blake. So Nan is a Federalist. You know, she's this staunch Federalist. It doesn't matter that she's living at this point in her life in New York. She sees herself on the verge of losing her country, and it torments her. Jim is an American boy, you know, and he sees Quebec from that open-minded American way of looking at things. I mean, he hasn't grown up in Ontario. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have all the Ontario hang-ups. So he loves Lévesque, you know, and he's in favor of Quebec doing whatever it wants to do. And the father, George, is a New Yorker with that kind of radical New York mindset, and he too thinks, look, there's Quebec. It's going through a really exciting point in its history. It's on the verge of gaining independence. Go for it. And then Lulu herself although Canadian, has a Quebec mother, and she too is in favor of Quebec leaving the country. So Nan, in a way, is on her little island of lonely concern, and all of the arguments get played out and become quite emotional.
Yeah, for a lot of people that don't understand what's happened in this country, whether it was the first referendum in the 80s and then the second one in 1995, was that compared to the Federalist characters, the separatist characters, whether it was Lévesque in the early 80s or, say, Lucien Bouchard in the mid-90s, were a lot more charismatic, were
yes.
a lot, than, say, the you know, Chrétien or Trudeau, even.
Well, yes. Now, we could have a great debate about that, because I actually think Chrétien was a fascinating figure. But I think all of these people are.
Yeah.
You see these big personalities on a large political screen, and I find it fascinating to watch how they operate. But without any question, Lévesque was fascinating. Bouchard was fascinating. But I also think Trudeau was, and Chrétien was. And the issues they were dealing with were big issues, burning questions, you know, burning
mm-hmm.
questions. And to take that first question we talked about, what's the worst thing you've ever done, over the course of the book, it kind of gets turned. And the question becomes then, what if the best thing you've done is also the worst thing you've done, or vice versa?
Right.
Because when you look at what happened in Quebec and Trudeau's role there, you could certainly argue that he did more harm than good. That is an open debate.
And I know that you, in the acknowledgments note, Donald Britton's The Champions.
Yes, have you seen it?
Oh, I grew up watching it, and I can still remember bits of it. And one of the more fascinating pieces is, I think it's Claude Charron, who says, between Trudeau and Lévesque, Trudeau was who we wanted to be, and Lévesque was who we were.
Yeah, that's a great moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
I remember that, too.
And I guess it just says, you know, why people in Quebec, I mean, it's one of the reasons why, I guess, separatism did so well, was because these guys, whether it was Lévesque or Bouchard, really tapped into something that Quebecers who were separatists, what they really wanted, I guess,
yes.
who they were, you know?
That's right. It was and remains, I mean, it's on the back burner right now, but who knows how long it'll stay there, a vivid dream. And it's a dream of fulfilling your potential, right?
Yeah.
As a place, as a people, as a... it's hard for Canada to compete with that dream, and yet it can and does compete. But it's all of these divided loyalties we have that I wanted to explore, and I wanted the questions to matter enough to the characters that they would then matter to the reader, even a reader who didn't really follow that debate. You know, because depending on where you were in the country or how old you were, it might have passed over your head. But I wanted to reanimate it and make the characters alive enough that what mattered to them would matter to the reader.
You see, I'm about the same age that Jim would have been in 1995. So a lot of those things I've only learned from, say, watching documentaries or reading books.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see how the country has changed a little bit. I mean, as you said, the separatism is on the back burner at the moment. It's surprising how quickly that happened after 1995.
Right.
Thanks to people like Jean Chrétien.
Well, yes, that's right. No, it's always in motion, always moving, and we don't actually see some of the moves until they come up behind us,
yeah.
You know, and so you can't predict these things. You can't predict the outcome, and you never know when there'll be another curve, another sort of plot twist that takes us somewhere unexpected.
Did you in the course of writing this book ponder your own sense of what home is?
Well, I do. I always do that. Although I feel, you know, so Canadian that it's, I was going to say so Canadian it's a bit pathetic. I'm entrenched in Canada. I can't really imagine living anywhere else. I did, you know, I did live in the States and in Mexico for 8-9 years. I was so homesick. And it's not that I don't see all the problems in the country. It's not that I'm not in a continual state of disappointment about things. I am, but there's just something about living in a place where you feel you're a part of it, where you're in touch with your childhood, where you're in touch with the landscape that made you think the way you think, and where you're able to breathe the air you need to breathe and have, you know, live through the seasons you need to experience. So I'm this kind of dedicated Canadian.
So in the course of the book, you illuminate the relationship of Nan and Jim, and the relationship that a mother has with a son, and vice versa. What were you thinking about that relationship between a mother and a son as you were writing his own life?
I was thinking about trying to go deep into a mother and son relationship. I'd read a couple of books where there was a mother and a son, and I just thought that the treatment had been shallow, and that I could do more. I could go deeper with that. And driving the book also was it's in the epigraph. It's a little. I quote a poem by an American poet, George Aupin, that talks about families dispersing into adulthood. So I, in a way, I knew, although I didn't know quite where I was headed with the book, I always knew that one place I would end would be with the boy dispersing into adulthood and the mother left stranded, in a way, by the loss of her son.
And so did you feel, say, a change in, not a change, but did you understand, say, your own relationship with your son differently?
Oh, well, I think Jim is a fictional character. There's a lot of my son in him, mm-hmm. but he's also a boy who I wanted to have.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to spend time with him. I'm actually very close to my son, but there are certain ways he drives me nuts, and one has been his kind of antipathy to Canada.
Mm.
He was born in New York. He's never quite forgiven me for dragging him to Canada. He doesn't find Canada an interesting place. He's living in England right now, and I wanted to have a boy who loved Canada. So that's Jim, you know.
Yeah.
Jim fulfills certain of my own needs, and the other thing was that I very much regretted never having given my son a dog. He wanted a dog, and for various reasons, I didn't get him a dog. So I wanted to give Jim, the fictional boy, a dog. And so as I'm revealing, I was working out various regrets of mine.
Yeah.
In the book.
What has he thought of the book?
Well, wonderfully, last summer when I was having trouble with the final editing of it, I asked as a great favor if he would read it,
mm-hmm.
because you know children don't necessarily read the books their parents write, and he hadn't read any of my books, although he's a very fabulous reader and a really good editor. He's 27 now,
mm-hmm.
so I gave him the book. Please, I need your help. And he did a fabulous job of reading it, understanding it, appreciating it, and recommending great changes. For instance, I wasn't sure just how accurate I was being about a 10, 11, 12-year-old boy in the realm of sex. And so my son, whose name is Ben, said to me, "There is nothing that an 11-year-old boy has not thought about sex."
I can concur. So are you hearing from readers of the book already about their own introspection with regards to regrets, say, after reading this book?
Well, the response has been really very positive and enthusiastic, and it's great for me, you know, great for me that people respond so well to the book. And always a point of conversation is this one of what's the worst thing you've ever done? It does provoke conversation. It does provoke, and the bond between the mother and son also is something that people respond to.
Do you have any advice or insight as to why we're not able to take things so personally?
You mean why we do take things so personally?
Yeah. Yeah, so how can we not take things personally, perhaps?
That's such a lifelong struggle.
Yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about as I've been starting your book. To be a well-adjusted person, you're not supposed to regret stuff and not supposed to take things personally, but we all do it.
Well, we do it. And I think this what happens is we... When you take something personally, as I say in the book, you become very small. It's just you, and it's just you. You can't really see anything except your point of view about somebody. So you're missing the whole story that way, and you're just locked into yourself. So how do you break out? And for me, it's just this constant struggle and yearning to have a larger life, to not be trapped into such a narrow way of looking. And I do it by reading. Reading saves me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because you enter, if the book is a good one, right, then you're entering already a larger world, and you're with other people, and you're seeing things from their points of view. And it's freeing, right? It releases you from your own pettiness. And the other thing, of course, is writing. So working with this material, you can take material, dark material, where people are nasty, people are small-minded, but you can work with it and make something of it and move it into a larger area so that people understand themselves better and understand other people better.
Well, one of the things in reading up on you, I've looked at the reviews for this book, and as you said, the response has been quite good. There was a line in one review that I was wondering about. It said that after 8 books and a slew of awards, readers have come to expect a certain level of excellence. As the writer, I mean, I'm assuming that puts a burden on you, does it?
It writing a book is hard enough. Just to get it to a stage where I think it's any good. Something that burdened me a bit was not the Giller Award as such, but the following book, Alone in the Classroom, didn't win a big award, and then I had to deal with that disappointment. On the other hand, once you've been through it, mm-hmm. then all right, well, so it didn't, and I survived that, and I'm just going to keep on working.
Yeah.
I think that's really my point. The way I look at it is every book is hard. You reach a point in every book where you think what you've got is garbage, and all you can do is work at it more. All you can do is not give up, and remind yourself that you just have to be willing to do the work.
Yeah, and it's rewarding when a book finally comes out and people have enjoyed it as much as they have or loved it even.
Well, that's tremendously rewarding. It's tremendously rewarding. And I feel that I now have an ace up my sleeve. Everything I write, I'm going to get my son to read.
There you go.
They can be the editor.
Yeah.
And it'll be better, It'll be much better
exactly.
as a result.
Yeah. It's been so nice to talk again. Congratulations on this
thank
book.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
The website for more, ElizabethHay.com. The book is called His Own Life. It's published by McClelland & Stewart. It's author Elizabeth Hay. Join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.